Welcome to this Wednesday edition of Main Street here on Prairie Public. I'm Craig Blumenschein. We are glad that you are with us today. Coming up in just a bit, we'll check in with Memory Fireworks just south of Fargo. What are the trends this year? What has our country's 250th birthday meant to the fireworks industry here in the state? Where do all these fireworks even come from? And we'll have our news podcast, Prairie Beat, on a little bit of a lighter note today. Prairie Beat will ask staff here at Prairie Public what their plans are for the 4th and what the nation's 250th birthday means to them. But first, our weekly check-in with food here in the region. Here's Prairie Plates.
Welcome to another edition of Prairie Plates here on Main Street. I'm Rick Ian. We have some special guests again this week. Two fellas that really do a good job in the restaurant industry here in downtown Fargo, and it's really a privilege and honor to have them in. Owner of the Toasted Frog, Ryan Langerud, and head chef, Garrett Gelsnes. Fellas, thanks for coming in today.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
First, Ryan, you have an interesting story. You worked at Sanders and Grand Forks, then moved to California, and now you're back here in the Red River Valley.
Yeah, I think that you are pointing out something interesting, though, that a lot of influence in restaurants came from Kim Holmes and Sanders and Monty's back in those days, and what became other restaurants later on, Harry's even Steakhouse right now, and influenced from that. But by working there, I worked with the two owners of the Toasted Frog here, and when it was closing, I ended up reaching out to them, and we were able to make a deal to kind of keep it going, to sort of keep hopefully the legacy alive.
Because it was closing last summer and the owners up in Grand Forks wanted to close it because it was just getting to be a little too much. And then you came back, bought it last summer, right?
Correct. We're coming up on our 1-year anniversary here. Yeah. Like July 1 is when we took over last year. Yeah, just after 1 year, I can see one restaurant is a lot of work, let alone having two restaurants to deal with. So the 1-year anniversary, looking back and seeing some of the things that we've done well over the year, some of the things that we need to improve on still. But we feel like we've made some progress.
Well, we're really happy that you decided to make that purchase here in Fargo-Moorhead. A lot of people, especially in downtown, enjoy the Toasted Frog. I just find that it's a really nice place. The food's always solid. The drinks are always solid. And it's just a fun, upscale place that's not uptight, that you can kind of just go and chill. I was wearing on Saturday a Luckenbach, Texas shirt in there, but I've also, worn a suit in there and had just a blast with a bunch of people. It's always a fun place to go.
One table is last night, a guy had a Mars Attacks t-shirt on. Next table, someone is wearing, a suit or a tie. And having that feel comfortable with both, that neither person feels out of place, and to have that kind of like right balance.
And we kind of talked about this a little bit, but describe the Toasted Frog for us a little more in depth.
Kind of a tough question. Maybe Chef wants to try that.
It's kind of a little bit of a lot. I like the Italian influence that I bring to it.
I think Chef has some deep Italian influence in his culinary influences and
repertoire,
absolutely. I think some of the places I worked at had some French influences. I had to work for Iron Chef Morimoto in Napa, so I think there's still, and a place called Hakkasan in San Francisco that had Asian influences, and so I always still have an affinity for some of those things. Our sous chef, Dennis, likes some of those leanings. So hopefully that combination where we have chef's main influence being, hopefully Italian, Northern Italian, a little bit of French touches, and maybe some fusion in there that works. A new American restaurant is what the computer calls us, which kind of allows us to do from a fried pickle to a scallop with a saffron beurre blanc.
Yeah, I would describe your food as elevated American, but definitely major European influence. I do want to ask Chef Garrett, what do you think about the food scene in downtown Fargo? It's very vibrant, and there are a lot of really talented cooks, bartenders.
There's a lot of skill downtown. I like the diversity that we have. I wish there was more, but I understand why there's not. I think if the city of Fargo can do something to make downtown a better, more inviting place for people, we could get the things that we're missing.
Yeah, I had to agree with that, like that there's a place you can get from our friend's little brother, Metzaluna, to Youngblood Coffee, to even, like what Chef's saying, you can go get a different thing. Silver Linings Ice Cream. You can spend a whole afternoon downtown. And with the farmer's market coming up, it's a great time for people to come to do that and then maybe explore a little bit of downtown afterwards.
And we may have some folks from the Red River Market coming in next week. So that will be a lot of fun. And we're talking today with Toasted Frog owner Ryan Langerud and head chef Garrett Chelsness. And we're having a fun discussion today about their restaurant in downtown Fargo. But now we're going to switch to talking about food and beverage, which is my favorite. So, Ryan, talk about some items on your menu. And I had cheesy pickles last Saturday, which are just always so good. And that's what you're known for. But there are many other things on your menu which are quite good.
The cheesy pickles are popular. That was the number one question when I took back over in the restaurant was, are you going to keep the pickles? I was like, yeah, no, I'm going to get rid of the pickles. No, the pickles are awesome. And it's difficult for us not to indulge daily too much. I try to keep it to maybe one a day. But it's a great little fusion dish. And maybe that's actually a good indicator of the way the restaurant thinks is that they could put something together that's disparate products that all of a sudden create this new thing. Doesn't always work with fusion, but it sometimes can be create something like that.
Yeah, and we're working on a new fall menu coming up. Pretty exciting. A lot of fish on there. Might be sneaking some oxtail in there if that interests you.
Braised oxtail really interests me. It's just, it's unctuous and it's just delicious. And you can use it for quite a few dishes. But oxtail may sound weird, but I really like it.
Well, and when we talk about the different food items, I think something that we've made a deliberate choice is to try to be sort of a Midwest themed thing, from our original elk burger that was there to Chef's Quail, you know, the walleye is on the menu, to have something sort of semi-regional to the best of our ability. But then understanding that we're limited to some of our products, so we have to bring in some other outside things. But to have that combination and kind of that feel of a Midwestern restaurant that you wouldn't normally see in another area. Actually, Chef had made a crispy duck salad that was very interesting and nice that I think we're going to probably develop and try to keep going through and put under the fall.
I think with Chef Garrett, you find a lot of the specials are unique and very interesting flavors. I think they're just really creative dishes, and you're kind of pushing the boundaries, which I really like to see.
I like to take things that, like, find something that goes off of something traditional and then just kind of take a right hook to it and see where it goes.
Which menu items right now are some of your favorite to make, or one item that's your favorite to make?
Oh, that is really tough. I really like our beef cheek agnolotti. I like doing from scratch pasta. That's always fun. And just working with ingredients that maybe a lot of people haven't heard of.
And you don't find fresh house-made pasta a lot. Spaghetti Western does some of that, but that can be really special. Ryan, let's talk a little bit about craft cocktails. And I really enjoy tequila and gin drinks. And I've noticed that you have some really good bartenders that have a lot of talent. But talk a little bit about maybe some cocktails for the summertime that you would recommend.
We try to have a pretty balanced list, and I do agree we have a very talented bartending team as well. The espresso martini is very popular there. The Frog was known for its martinis before, so we still have some of those, but our bar has tried to push into some other things. Like there's a Hugo Spritz that's very popular right now, so popular in France, I have to keep getting more elderflower liqueur, St. Germain to keep making it. They've also combined some fresh ingredients in a Pimm's cup, some different things, some cucumbers, some lively fragrances that come with it, like where the drinks almost become a visual experience as well as...
It's a piece of art.
I think that the creativity is there. It's kind of constant. We have some great NA drinks that are a whole menu designed for that as well. And so I think also some nice wines we have that are set up for summer. Like we just brought in a Picpoul, which is from France, that if you like rosé, I think you'd very much like. There's everything by the glass, so we're trying to give people a chance to explore some different things. But summer is a great time for, a nice rosé wine and maybe come in and get some scallops. What we also do really well is like the classics, like an old-fashioned or just like a classic martini, like just a straight, gin martini, or if you want to do just even a real high-end margarita, we can do that too.
You've spent time in California. Any California varietals at Sauv Blanc, that sort of thing, although that's a French name, but...
The time I spent in Napa influenced the way I tried to start the list, at least, to be very, you know, a lot of Napa cabs and some things like that. But then we also have some beautiful, yeah, there's actually a really nice Napa Sauvignon Blanc on there, a Banshee Rosé that's made by a local guy from Fargo that actually now works in Sonoma. And so trying to even have that kind of connection too, if we can, like something that's both, you know, local, but also then both from a great wine region of the world.
Toasted Frog, always a great place for food and beverage. Ryan, where can listeners find information on the restaurants? Facebook, Instagram?
So both right now. That has been a unique struggle from taking over a current existing restaurant, is even trying to reestablish like control of all of those networking things that already existed that someone else had control over. But right now, Instagram and Facebook is current. And we do have a new website that has our current menu on, too, that we could plug is www.thetoastedfrogfargopartdue.com.
There are all those dynamics, those marketing dynamics that go into running a restaurant, and you're so busy cooking or making drinks or running plates that you don't really have time to focus on that stuff. But it's all a part of running it these days. And it just goes to show how hard folks work in this industry. Ryan, anything else you'd like to add about the Toasted Frog in downtown Fargo? Chef Garrett, any input?
Right now we're workshopping a really sturdy, wonderful fall menu, probably release September around Labor Day. So definitely check that out. But in the meantime, what we have for the spring-summer menu is phenomenal. Come check us out for that as well.
Yeah, one plug, if it's a food thing, is Chef Scallops. The combination with the cranberry and the scallop, some of those unique dishes, that flavor combinations that I wouldn't have thought of, that's been one of the best parts of coming into the Frog, is like getting to experience some of those new things. And if there's something I would say about downtown, is that I've always been a big believer in many of the cities I've lived in, the downtowns that thrive, they have a thriving city, I think. It's a good meeting place for people, like a central point where there can be this kind of connectivity. It's easy in a town that's spread out, like in a word, or like it's spread out around, that to forget about a downtown and come and explore. Come check out the downtown if you're a Fargoan.
Well, gathering and community are a big theme with owning a restaurant. Owner Ryan Langerud and Chef Garrett Gelsness of the Toasted Frog in downtown Fargo, it's been a pleasure having you in. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
This has been another edition of Prairie Plates here on Main Street. I'm Rick Guillen. We'll talk to you next week.
The Trowood Performing Arts School presents Disney's Frozen, July 20th through August 1st at Bluestem Center for the Arts in Moorhead. Directed by Trowood alumna and Broadway performer Becky Galsvig. Information at trowood.org.
This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Craig Blumenschein, and every 4th of July, skies across North Dakota and the country come alive with color, sound, and celebration. But fireworks have changed a lot over the years. New effects, bigger displays, quieter options for some neighborhoods, and even changing customer tastes or reshaping what people buy. Before you light the fuse this Independence Day, we're taking a behind-the-scenes look at the world of fireworks. Joining us is David Reuter, General Manager of Memory Fireworks just south of Fargo. We'll talk about what's new this year, the biggest trends, important safety reminders, where all those amazing fireworks come from, and even whether fireworks season maybe has become a little too long. Probably not in your eyes. David, welcome to Main Street.
Thanks for having me.
So every year, something a little bit different. What's new in fireworks this year?
Well, the new stuff, really, they got this new effect. It's kind of coming out last year. I call them zing-zangs. That's probably not the proper term. But when things explode in the air, then they kind of zip and zing across the sky. So it's really neat. It's different.
So coming into your store, you have so much that's here. What is it that customers maybe ask for first?
A lot of customers ask somebody in yellow, just, can you help me build a show? Because they don't know, a lot of them don't know, or they're people we've helped in the past. So if you talk to somebody in a yellow shirt, basically we'll ask a few you know, a few questions like, A, what's your budget? And we don't care, 500, 5,000, 200, you know what I mean? Whatever, we can help you. And then like, do you want angled cakes? Do you want
what's an angled cake?
So an angled cake, instead of just going straight up, they're angled out to the sides just a little bit. So they're going to cover the whole sky.
Go like left to right, left like a metronome. Right.
Yes, correct. Uh-huh. And then like there's 200 gram cakes, which are a little bit smaller. And then the 500 gram cakes are the bigger ones. And then artillery or mortars are the ones you put in the tube and shoot off one at a time. So we want to make, and then we'll ask like, what, do you have any favorite colors? Do you like willow? You know what I mean? Like there's some very basic questions to us that we can ask a customer to get them the best show possible.
Is there a limit on the size of a firework that you can sell to a customer?
Yes, 500 grams is the biggest for the multi-shots, and then 60 grams is the biggest for the artillery.
And if I were gonna go to a professional show, say at the Red River Valley Fairgrounds, are those even bigger than what you sell?
Correct. You need a Class B license to purchase those and sell those. Those are bigger and like professional fireworks.
So then what are the biggest trends this year? Are they those bigger aerial shells, the multi-shot cakes, even sparklers or family packs?
Yep. So there's a couple trends. One thing that we've tried to do the last few years is you have one extreme to the other. You have people that have parents or kids that they may not like loud noises. Or they're younger or maybe even autistic or something along those lines. So we try to get some fountains that are noiseless. We try to get some cakes like the Jack and Jill. They're not very loud. So that's a way to for those kids. But then the other big trend this year is people that are doing bigger shows are doing more of our big finale cakes. Less of the normal size 500 grams and more of the finales because they don't want to light off as much, but they still want a big show.
I've got to ask you, and if you can't answer, I understand. What's the biggest sale you've made this year?
This year, $11,000.
Has technology changed in the last dozen years or so from what we used to be able to buy to what we can buy today?
Yes, so actually we're standing right by the one called You Betcha. And this is a little multi-shot. When the Knutson started this business 40 years ago, this was the big dog. Like this little cake was, if you had this, you had the biggest thing, you know. So then now things have gotten bigger and grander. The other thing is the packaging. Like you see fountains now that are shaped like Mario or unicorns or like the pack. They're just doing so much more with the packaging.
And you package some of the fireworks with a North Dakota theme.
That's correct.
It could be the same fireworks sold in New York, but you brand it differently. How does that work?
So actually, most of the stuff in the Memory in Dakota series, that's what we're known for. We find something we like and we change it. We make it better. It's like, we like that, but we want it to do this too. And because, you know, we operate 25 to 30 stores across the state, we order so much of it, the places we buy from will make it unique for us. So like, you know, like we have the GF Bomber, the Fargo, the Minot Magic, the Prairie Rose. So a lot of North Dakota themes are like, even Big Baby, it's a big willow and it's got Henry, one of the grandkids, picture as a baby on the cake, you know. So a lot of, we want to keep it local and North Dakota.
David Reuter is the general manager of Memory Fireworks, just south of Fargo is where we're visiting today. Take us behind the scenes, if you will. Most of us get to see all of these great fireworks on your shelf. Where do they come from?
Just about everything is made in China.
So have tariffs impacted you a little bit?
Yes, depending on when they came in throughout the year, tariffs have affected us differently. We've tried to do a lot of things, and so have the people that make them. They're trying to make packaging smaller because it's not just the tariffs, it's the shipping costs. So they're making, like family packs used to have a header on the top, which made the cases bigger. Now they're getting rid of that header and putting the name across the front of the packaging to try to keep the cost down.
So how far in advance did you have to start planning for this 4th of July?
We have most our order in by the beginning of August. You have to have them in a year in advance because China does fireworks for the whole world. So, you know, they're doing the European market, you know what I mean? So like if you don't get your orders in right away, you might not get your product.
So this is a special year, our country's 250th anniversary. Did that make what you ordered a bit different this year?
Yes, we ordered more because a lot of people are going bigger. And then we also tried to get more red, white, and blue Like when we were walking in, I told those gentlemen that we have some Saturn missiles, 250 strong. They have red, white, and blue in them. Our big time we've had for a long time, but that's selling really good always because of red, white, and blue. So a lot of people are requesting more red, white, and blue.
So what's it like running a business like this that is so centered upon the 4th of July? What do you do for the rest of the year?
Well, actually, people always think I work 2 weeks a year. I've had 2 days off since April, which was to go coach at the state track meet. But we have product coming in all year. And then as you see, this is a big store. So I keep this store is open year round by appointment to out-of-state customers. So as stuff comes in, I'm stocking the shelves. You know, we have multiple stores that come out of this warehouse. So I'm separating the fireworks to the proper town and stuff like that. So when there's this big of an operation, there's a lot more to do than what people realize.
Is it odd to you that you can sell year round to people that aren't from North Dakota?
It is unique. It's different. You can say that.
Let's talk about safety. What are the biggest mistakes that people make after they leave your store?
Well, for one, buying something they don't know what it is. You know, if you don't know what something is, you should definitely ask somebody because somebody might buy an aerial shot thinking it's a fountain. You know what I mean? So you want to know what you're buying for starters. But then also, we always really stress alcohol and fireworks do not mix. You know, if somebody's lighting off, they shouldn't be drinking. We tell people to brace everything no matter what. Always have water handy to douse things down. And then especially when you get done shooting stuff, pour water over your fireworks. I've heard stories of people, they'd pick them up right away and throw them in their dumpster and the fire starts
because
they're still hot.
Uh-oh.
Yes, exactly. So, you know, we want everyone to have fun and a good time, but we want everyone to be safe. And then the other thing too we really want to stress is be kind to your neighbor. You know what I mean? Like, don't be lighting stuff off at 2 a.m. Follow the local laws and pick up your garbage after you're done.
What about parents and kids?
Parents and kids?
Yeah.
You know, we've really tried to do a lot of family friendly, because kids want to be involved too, no matter what age they are. So like we have a light up bracelet, LED bracelet. And then we have an LED light stick and for those, we actually donate money back to Gigi's Playhouse here in Fargo. And then also Make-A-Wish of North Dakota. But we want everyone to be able to be involved, you know? And then we also have tons of kids items. If you want ground, aerial, you know, we got the snaps, the snakes, the tanks, Dakota Glories, which is we call it a sparkler on steroids. So, you know, whatever you want, we got it.
So are there any myths about fireworks that just make you cringe when you hear them?
Well, I hear a lot of stuff like, well, in Wisconsin, they sell bigger fireworks, or in Missouri, you know, and it's a law across, you know what I mean? So you're not getting bigger stuff in a different state kind of thing. That's one of the big things. And then also the myth that I only work 2 weeks a year is very frustrating.
You talked about being a good neighbor and fireworks. They're just exciting, but it is true that not everyone can enjoy them. So people with pets, veterans, and people who work early mornings, you encourage customers to really think about that.
Yes, definitely. You know, obviously, you know, people like to celebrate with fireworks on the 4th of July, which is great. But then you also have people that are lighting stuff off at 2 a.m. for weeks at a time, you know, and we don't want that. You know what I mean? Because we want people to celebrate, but at the same time, the people that don't want that stuff, we don't want them to have to deal with that for weeks at a time either. So,
do you think that the windows where fireworks are sold in North Dakota is just about right, or should they be available to us year round?
You know, I think it's okay the way it is. You know, now technically North Dakota residents can light them off outside of city limits year round, but I really have no issue with the time limits, you know, because like I said, this is a year round thing. And you know, when we're getting, it's very difficult when this store, the horror store, opens on Memorial Day weekend and I have it open that whole time. Well, when I'm getting containers in and plus have the store open, plus, you know, it's hard to balance everything for me too. You know what I mean? So, I think the time frame is just fine.
I'm going to give you the opportunity to only buy one thing in your store this year. What's your go-to?
My go-to is actually the Dakota Strong. The labeling, it's to honor first responders. It's got like a fire truck and police car and ambulance on it. It's 58 shots. It lasts a minute and it has lots of variety, a few loud ones. It's a good like finale cake for a smaller show.
What surprised you most about this business, the business of fireworks?
The people, to be honest with you, because what I think is really cool is the number of people that come in every year. And, you know, I've been doing this for over 10 years, 14, 15 years. And it's kind of fun watching the same people come in and grow up. I had some customers the other day that their daughter's now six and I've known her since a baby. You know what I mean? So it's just the relationships is what that I've built with customers that come in every year. That's actually what surprises me the most.
If I'm planning a backyard show for this Saturday, how big should my backyard be before I make the decision I need to go somewhere else?
You want to have, you know, you should be at least 100 feet away, people watching it from where you're lighting off. You know, there's lots of things like when I talked about the angled cakes.
That's over 30 yards.
Yes, yes. So when I was talking earlier about angled cakes, you know, people that have trees, you probably want stuff straight up and down. You know what I mean? Like, so that's part of the questions we ask when people are lighting them off.
What about weather? Do you tell people that, hey, if the wind's blowing over X miles an hour, you shouldn't do this?
The thing is with the weather too, it's the more things, it kind of ruins the fireworks because the patterns don't show up because they get blown so fast, you know, and most people are pretty responsible in my opinion on that kind of stuff. If the wind's blowing the wrong direction, there's a lot of customers that have told me, you know, I'm not coming in this year. They actually let me know because last year the wind was blowing this way and we had a lot of tall grass there, so they didn't do it. So most customers, especially ones doing bigger shows, are very aware of that.
Last words for folks that are going to celebrate this Saturday.
You know, come out to Memory Fireworks and come out early because Thursday, Friday, we think it's going to be nuts here. So if you want to avoid the rush and the crowd, come on out. We have a ton of supply and we're happy to take care of you no matter what your budget is.
What David said earlier, remember that a great fireworks show is more than just about what's loud and booms bright colors. It's about creating memories while keeping family, friends, and neighbors very safe. David Reuter, the general manager of Memory Fireworks here south of Fargo. Thanks.
Thank you.
Still to come on this Wednesday's Main Street, our regional news podcast, Prairie Beat. That's right after this news. This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Craig Blumenschein. As Americans mark the nation's 250th birthday this 4th of July, some of us at Prairie Public reflect on the traditions and memories that make Independence Day meaningful across North Dakota.
Well, hey there, I'm Eric Dethridge.
And I'm Danielle Webster. Welcome back once again to Prairie Beat.
It's our weekly news podcast here at Prairie Public. Danielle, with so many things going on here in North Dakota and across the country, what are we going to be discussing today?
Well, this week, you know, the United States will not only be observing the 4th of July holiday. Obviously, we all know this year marks our 250th year as a country. And there's been a lot of excitement and discussion all year building toward that. This week is very exciting here in North Dakota as well, you know, as we officially open the Theodore Roosevelt Presidential Library.
Yeah, that's super exciting. I feel like we've been covering that for years and years at this point. What with all the planning and development of the facility, where to put it, you know, it was going to be in Dickinson at one point and then Medora, and that's where it is today. All that stuff, very cool to see it finally coming to be this week in that beautiful Western-themed town. And, of course, we've had a lot of coverage and content focusing on that with Steve Inskeep just the other day in Bismarck talking to the executive director, Robbie Loff, and today, of course, the president making a stop. They're literally a whistle stop on a train to mark the occasion as well.
Yeah, pretty big, exciting day and a week, you know, for that matter. And I got to thinking about, you know, the 4th of July in general. It's one of those days I personally find it to be very nostalgic to look back on. You know, growing up in the Devil's Lake area, it was a big gathering day for my extended family. We had, you know, my great grandmother's birthday. So everybody would convene, you know, at the lake lot near Woodland Resort on Devil's Lake. We all brought, you know, buckets of Kentucky Fried Chicken for lunch. And then later that night, we would cook hot dogs and burgers and steaks and stuff on the open fire. My cousins would be firing off bottle rockets, firecrackers. We'd roast marshmallows, all that fun stuff. And then that evening, you know, at the Woodland Resort there, one of my favorite memories was before the lake came way up, you know, in the 90s and it flooded, there was actually a little island in the middle of Creel Bay right there. So we'd walk down to the resort and everybody would be sitting outside and watching fireworks that were lit off from that island. And it was really beautiful to see the fireworks over the water. It was beautiful. Yeah.
Well, when I was growing up, I don't have quite as extensive and beautiful of a story as that, but my neighborhood in Columbia, Maryland, a suburb outside of Baltimore, a planned community, we had a 4th of July parade in our neighborhood. It was called Friends of Longfellow Parade. And like, it was just a little thing. You know, you ride your bike, there'd be fire truck police and some politicians waving and stuff. But then all of a sudden, like, it got well known. Like, people from all over would come to see it. And so this little neighborhood parade in this suburb, and then, like, big politicians would come. Last year, I saw photos of Governor Wes Moore shaking hands, like, right outside my old house there in Columbia, Maryland. But fireworks, it was just left to the professionals. We would just go down to the lakefront in Columbia and watch them, and there you go.
Yeah, and you know, and today what I did was I walked around the offices here at Prairie Public, and I asked a few of our coworkers just to share some of their own memories of the 4th of July, and also about some of their plans maybe that they have for this year. You know, what are you going to eat? Where are you going to go? What are you going to do? And also, you know, with this being such a big, exciting time, you know, the 250th anniversary of our country, it's a special occasion. I asked about any reflections they may have on that.
As a kid, I used to do 4th of July with my grandma and grandpa, and we'd get some fireworks and blow off firecrackers and just have a nice meal. And then growing up, when my kids were little, we'd always have people over to our house, and we'd do a lot of fireworks and barbecue. And now we go to my daughter's house, and we're going to do family time there, too, and barbecue and maybe have a few fireworks, maybe not. It all depends. We usually do firecrackers and bottle rockets and smoke bombs and small stuff, and we don't buy any of that big stuff. We usually watch that for free. This year we're going to do pulled pork sandwiches and some dips and chips and different things to go with that.
Yes, celebrating America's 250th birthday is definitely a special and unique time. I'm going to try to do something locally here. I'm not going anywhere, unfortunately, but I'll try to find something to do and make it special. You know, happy birthday to America. And for me, celebrating with food is really important, and I think that's something I'm going to, that's going to be a part of what I do. Grilled burgers and brats, I think, are the most important things to cook on Independence Day weekend. I really like steaks, too. You know, you could add in some grilled salmon or something like that. If you're at the lake and you catch some walleyes, even better. But, you know, I like salads. I don't discriminate when it comes to food, but especially with grilled meats, that's a priority for me.
So I remember us doing fireworks, and then the cops would come and say, "You gotta be quiet." And then my dad would say, "Well, we got a couple more, we got like a half an hour left." So then we'd blow up, we'd keep doing fireworks, and then if he saw the cops coming again, we'd run inside. But now it's legal, so now we do it, you know, we just do it every...
Yeah.
But when I was little, my dad would spend a ton of money. It would be everyone in the neighborhood would come kind of in our area, and we'd put them all together and then just light them up. I don't remember a big show was being when I was little, but I do remember watching that.
Okay.
We would grill, and then everyone would just bring their own, like, pasta salad or, you know, sides or whatever. So, yeah, we would just grill. We still grill now. That's just kind of what we do.
On Little Cormorant, they have a 4th of July parade. So we sit and watch that, and then we all go on the boat and watch fireworks. The whole lake fills with boats, usually, watching the fireworks, so... My mom used to make red, white, and blue Rice Krispies or Oreo layered dessert with the different colors in it, or Jell-O layered as the flag. She can be festive.
Yeah, and the Jell-O is, I feel like that's a very Minnesota, North Dakota.
Yes, yes.
I think we're making strip and go nakeds this weekend.
What are those?
Those are with the lemonade, that the frozen lemonade concentrate, beer, and vodka.
Oh my.
I think it's good. We're doing it because we heard that they're eliminating the lemonade and orange juice concentrate. And so we decided this could be our last time ever doing this.
Yeah, like the last hurrah of the... Yeah. Oh, that's great.
I think we always tried to find, like, a fireworks show, whether that was, like, in town at the local casino or school. And when I was a kid, we climb into the back of my dad's pickup truck and watch it all together. And it was always fun when we'd get a little bit too close and we'd have, like, firework ash falling onto us. And I still really like fireworks. I love the ones that look like they're, like, gold and they kind of glitter as they're coming down. But I feel like I don't, like, seek them out as much. Maybe that's a good reminder to me that I should this year.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's always the best when it's reflected on water, too, I feel like.
Yeah.
Yeah. For my work at Prairie Public, I've been spending a lot of time understanding the significance of our journey as a country and what has shaped us in the past. But it's also a really fun chance to think forward and maybe add a layer of, like, hope and excitement to what's to come. I think it's been really fun to understand the complexity of the past, but then take that into the future and know that, like, I don't know, the human spirit is so beautiful and we have a lot of work to do, but
we're gonna do it
yeah. All together.
I've always thought, of course, of America over the years as a land of opportunity, and to imagine that 250 years of building that foundation of immigrants, of citizens, anyone having opportunities, limitless opportunities, is something that I wholeheartedly want to see continue. And there's so many amazing minds and people and hearts in this country that I hope that that can persevere. And I mean, I know it can. It's just, you know, realizing that we have a very unique situation here in the United States, and we want to continue that for generations to come.
Well, thank you to our colleagues here at Prairie Public today for sharing those memories and thoughtful thoughts with us for this episode here ahead of America's 250th birthday. I think it's nice to hear a little snapshot of perspectives from the Prairie region. I know it's just our office. It's a tiny little morsel of a snapshot, but hey, we're here and we got it. And I hope you enjoyed that poignant time, really, to reflect on the history of this nation and the people who were here before this nation was formed, centuries before the 250 years prior to now.
I've been thinking a lot about that too as well. You know, America is still pretty young, you know, as a country, you know, only 250 years old compared to many other places across the world. But we have such an incredible story to tell and to keep telling, which, you know, it's still unfolding every day. And one thing about the United States is that it's pretty much the only place in the world where the country is based on ideas. It's ideas of freedom, of self-governance, opportunity, and of citizenship. So it's a very unique place in the world. We have a great opportunity this week to reflect and celebrate that.
Yeah, indeed. And going back to my hometown of Columbia, Maryland, you know, I sort of undersold it a little bit, but I'm very proud of that community because it was created by a developer named James Rouse, who wanted to build out of the ashes of segregation and Jim Crow a place where people from all different backgrounds, walks of life, and skin tones can live and go to school together, work together. And that's how I grew up. I grew up in a very integrated place, something that we all take for granted, but at the time was a very radical idea. And I think that we're all still trying to strive for those great ideas that were formulated on paper 250 years ago.
Absolutely.
Well, we certainly hope and wish that you have a safe, fun few days here as you celebrate the 4th of July. Be festive, but of course, be safe. That's the main thing. We don't want any limbs being lost on the 4th of July, as unfortunately tends to happen. So, Danielle, what other stories have you, Dave, and Todd been working on this week?
Well, Todd spoke to the president and CEO at the Great Plains Food Bank about food insecurity issues in the state right now. The Red River Valley Fair is getting underway here this week as well. Fairgoers can take advantage of ND Sober Ride with a discount code if they are enjoying adult beverages there. And Dave wrote his column this week about his plans for live coverage of the Theodore Roosevelt Presidential Library. That story is certainly a gift that keeps on giving this week.
Yeah, it's going to be fun on Saturday. Dave's going to have Michael Patrick Cullinay at his side. He, of course, is a prominent historian and Theodore Roosevelt scholar at Dickinson State University, so you'll get that perspective. I have a chat with Prairie Rose Seminole about sort of indigenous perspectives of a library. Speaking of that, Chef Candace Stock, the executive chef of Salt and Scoria, the unique restaurant that serves indigenous foodways there to the throngs of people that are going to be there. I have a chance to have a chat with her, and I'll take you behind the scenes at some of the very cool exhibits inside the library. If you get a chance to go, go, because the experience is very stirring and it will leave you feeling actually pretty hopeful about America's next 250 years.
Excellent, excellent. Well, you know, for all that, be sure to tune in to Prairie Public or, you know, for more news as well. And you can also check us out online at news.prairiepublic.org.
All right, that's it for us this week on Prairie Beat. I'm Eric Detheridge.
And I'm Danielle Webster. We'll see you on the beat next week.
You can hear Prairie Beat every Wednesday on Main Street and anytime you'd like, when you subscribe to it as your favorite podcast. If you're listening to the 3 p.m. broadcast of Main Street, catch up on the news and stories from around the world, the nation, and here at home on All Things Considered. That's up next on Prairie Public. And if you're listening to us during the evening broadcast, keep it here for Travel with Rick Steves. That follows Main Street on Prairie Public.
Support for Prairie Public is provided by the John and Kathleen Risch Charitable Fund, proud to support trusted journalism, education, and the future of public broadcasting.
On the Great Plains, prairies are turning into woods and shrubs. Ranchers have been fighting back for years, trying to save the rangeland that feeds their cattle, with mixed results. Now, some say it's time to talk about what to do next, in places where wide-open vistas likely aren't coming back. Harvest Public Media's Celia Yopis-Jepson reports.
Alex McKiernan is driving me across his southeast Nebraska ranch on a four-wheeler, showing me all the trees and shrubs he and his ranch manager have spent years trying to kill. There's an Osage orange sapling about my height. A few years ago, they hacked open the tree trunk and squirted in herbicide.
So look at the base. Those really bright green glossy leaves are new basil sprouts. So that tree has been dead for years and it's coming back.
Why is that a problem? Cattle eat grass. Woody plants shade out grass. Also, this cattle ranch is tall grass prairie. It's an increasingly rare ecosystem that once covered a lot of the Midwest, but was mostly lost to cropland. Trees and shrubs are a big threat to what's left. But as much as McKiernan tries to fend them off with controlled fires, with herbicide, they just keep coming.
I mean, look across this landscape. Like, there are thousands of trees in front of us and thousands of little woody shrubs.
So in 2024, he decided to set aside the herbicide and add a second kind of livestock. Hundreds of goats. His goats happily strip shrubs and saplings of every last leaf. Yes, they still grow back, but for McKiernan, that's okay.
Great, that's more goat feed.
The shrubs will feed the goats year after year, and he can sell them for meat. So since he doesn't think he can beat the woody plants, he's changed his goal to coexisting. Jesse Nippert is a grassland ecologist at Kansas State University. He says some regions do still have intact prairie that's critical to protect. But there are other places where it's unrealistic to wipe the landscape clean of woody plants.
In the areas that have transitioned into a shrubland or a woodland, you're probably never going to get it back to this idealized pre-colonial, you know, landscape painting.
Humans have stacked the deck in favor of woody plants. We added more carbon dioxide to the air, which helps them grow faster and in drier places. And climate change is bringing wetter winters. That gives them a leg up, too. All those trees and shrubs are sucking water from streams and soil and stripping landscapes of biodiversity. Marissa Ollering is the director of science for the Nature Conservancy in Minnesota and the Dakotas. And in northern prairies, she's seen snowberry thickets take over.
Western snowberry can get really dense in a lot of places. And the problem is, if you get really dense snowberry, the only thing that grows underneath it is like Kentucky bluegrass.
If that's all that's left, it is not a good thing. And it's happening all across prairies as a handful of woody species muscle out a kaleidoscope of grasses and wildflowers.
if you have one shrubby species and like one grass species underneath, you reduce your bird community, reduce your insect community.
From Oklahoma up to South Dakota, dense juniper woods are cropping up with barely anything growing beneath them. In Kansas, wild plum is a big problem. In Texas, honey mesquite. So scientists like Nippert at Kansas State are thinking about how to reach a kind of balance in places where intact prairies likely aren't coming back.
So we need to be thinking about ways where there are some trees out there, but we're still having fresh water, forage for animals, diverse plants and animal species.
But he says there's no one way to achieve this. It'll depend on the specifics of each landowner's situation and goals. For McKiernan in Nebraska, goats check all the boxes. They're eating a lot of woody plants. Plus, they're boosting his bottom line.
We could not pay this mortgage without goats. Full stop.
His cattle margins were thin. Now the goat herd has doubled his livestock revenue. I'm Celia Yopis Jepson, Harvest Public Media.
This is Dakota Datebook for July 1st. James Smithson was an Englishman who never set foot in the United States. He bequeathed his estate to a nephew on one condition. If the nephew died without an heir, the money would go to the United States to found the Smithsonian Institution, an establishment for the increase and diffusion of knowledge. Henry James Hungerford died childless in 1835. And Smithson's wishes were fulfilled. On this date in 1836, President Andrew Jackson announced to Congress Smithson's bequest of 100,000 gold sovereigns. The Smithsonian Institution was later established by legislation. Today, nearly 190 years after its founding, visitors can view many remarkable artifacts housed in the Smithsonian. Some embody American history. The institution houses the Star-Spangled Banner that flew over Fort McHenry during the War of 1812. Visitors can see the desk used by Thomas Jefferson when he wrote the Declaration of Independence. Other artifacts, such as the ruby slippers from The Wizard of Oz and the Hope Diamond, reflect American culture. There are also exhibits devoted to science, technology, and the natural world. North Dakota is well represented. When Meriwether Lewis purchased scientific instruments for his upcoming expedition, he bought three pocket compasses for $2.50 each and a silver-plated compass for $5. He kept one compass as a memento and later gave it to his friend, Captain Robert McCabe. McCabe's heirs donated it to the Smithsonian in 1933. A headdress purchased from the Hunkpapa Chief Rain in the Face is housed in the Museum of the American Indian. The Smithsonian also has an extensive collection of Roger Maris memorabilia, and his portrait is included in the National Portrait Gallery collection. Not everything associated with North Dakota is in Washington, D.C. The Biedersfeld site near Lisbon is an archaeological site managed by the Smithsonian. It is the only documented village of earth lodges in the Red River watershed. The site was listed on the National Register of Historic Places in 1980 because of its archaeological significance. A visit to any of the Smithsonian's museums rewards visitors with a look at remarkable artifacts. And North Dakotans can take pride in knowing that their state is represented in many of its exhibits. Today's Dakota Datebook was written by Dr. Carol Butcher. I'm Errol Pepcorn.
Dakota Datebook is produced in cooperation with the State Historical Society of North Dakota, with funding by the Study ND, North Dakota's largest lifelong learning community.
Arts programming on Prairie Public is supported in part by the North Dakota Council on the Arts, a state agency developing, promoting, and supporting the arts in North Dakota.
Iran's oil exports have been under sanctions for decades. Now, as part of an interim agreement, the U.S. has lifted those sanctions temporarily. Some energy experts are surprised.
This would be a win for its new leadership. It's a win for the Revolutionary Guard.
What does it mean for Iran? That's on the next morning edition from NPR News.
Starting at 4 a.m. Central, right here on Prairie Public.
And that wraps up this Wednesday's Main Street. We are deeply grateful that you've spent time with us. Tomorrow on the show, at the Theodore Roosevelt Presidential Library's new restaurant, executive chef Candace Stock is serving more than memorable meals, and we'll get her story. Plus, AI in the real world, ethics beyond the hype. Our tech expert, George Peck, weighs in on AI and ethics. That's all ahead tomorrow on Main Street, and we look forward to your joining us again.